The following episode of the CADcast is brought to you by X-Blades for the PS3, Xbox 360, and PC, now featuring a special rebate offer. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to CADcast episode 157. I am Cheapy D, and I am in Tokyo.
And I am Wombat, and I am still in the basement.
You're in Nokio.
I am in Nokio, yes.
Well, we've got a big show today. We've got Nelson Rodriguez joining us, and if you don't know who Nelson is, he was the host of the Achievement Junkie podcast. Not Achievement Junkies, Wombat. A lot of idiots say Achievement Junkies.
That would just be stupid.
Right. He was the host of the Achievement Junkie. It was an Xbox 360 podcast. And he actually, through his podcast, wound up getting a job with Microsoft on the Xbox 360 marketing team. So we're going to be talking to him a little bit later. And even if you don't know who he is, I think you'll find it interesting. And, you know, you can see how his dreams came true and were, you know, torn to pieces when he was fired from Microsoft.
I still weep.
You still weep. Last week, Wombat, we did not have a show. Well, you had a show with Shipwreck because Ty was sick for most of the week, and I couldn't get it together. It was just too difficult for me. And you went ahead and did the CAG play forecast with Shipwreck, which I listened to, and
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was about as low energy as you could get. It was like two guys who were working. You could tell it was two guys who were working very hard during the day and felt like they had to do a show and didn't really know what they were doing.
Yeah, that
sounds
about
right. Know what they wanted to do.
Yeah, you know what else it was?
Good effort.
And this is something that you could probably relate to as you have a sick child. As you know, Sabrina was sick not last week but the week before. And when your child is sick, you kind of focus a lot of energy on the sick child. And then when your child is healthy and that weight is kind of lifted off you, you get really tired really fast.
Yeah. That's sort of what happened to me because Ty was sick for like Sunday through Wednesday. And I could have done a show like on Friday, but I just, or Thursday, but I was tired. I hadn't read any news the whole week, or I hadn't really even visited CAG much that whole week. I figured, let's just do a show early, you know, on Monday for the peoples.
So I appreciate it.
I don't know when you. I don't know if they have this in America, but Ty like had a bad cold and a fever. Do they have snot sucking machines in America?
I have the tube with the ball on the end that you stick in there and.
Oh that. Yeah, well, they have like automatic ones, like with an engine attached to it.
Yeah, no, we don't have that. No.
Oh yeah, so I've been taking Ty. I was taking Ty to that like every day, and he didn't really enjoy getting a tube shoved up his nose.
I can't imagine why.
Kind of uncomfortable. And speaking of the doctor, Wombat, you remember I told you a couple weeks ago that I had my duty checked and I had my whole body checked.
Yes, you went for the poop search. Yes,
I got my I got my results back.
And you have worms.
I did okay, except in two categories. I had my cholesterol. I had low good cholesterol and high bad cholesterol.
I can relate. I'm the same way.
And my liver. There was some problem with my liver.
You need to stop drinking so much.
I do not drink a lot.
Sure, David Crosby.
Sometimes there's a 2 weeks will go by and I won't even have a single drink. I don't get out much. So I went to the, I had to do a, they told me I had to come back to do a follow-up visit because of the liver thing. So I go over there and the guy asks me, he's like, all right, I'm looking at these numbers. Have you gained weight recently? Like right before you took this test, did you put on, some weight? And now that I think about it, I did. Like I've been really bad recently. I've been eating a lot of junk food, and I've been snacking a lot. I got a problem with snacking, Wombat. I don't know if you have that problem.
I'm more of an eating a lot at once, like twice a day, but I don't need a snack.
Right. So I find myself like opposite. I'll be walking on the street and I'll walk by a 7-Eleven or, you know, Family Mart, and I'll be like, oh, I could go for an ice cream right now, and I'll go inside and get an ice cream. So it turns out that, like, if you put on a lot of weight right before you take this test, it'll screw up your results. So right now I weigh like 213 pounds, and I should really weigh, you know, a little under 200. So I have to lose. He told me I have to lose like 10 pounds and then come back.
I need to lose a little more than 10 pounds. So I really don't care about your plight.
No. That's just to come back so I could take the test again.
Oh, okay. That's
because not screw up the results. But I was scared there for a minute. But I don't know, man. I like to eat. And the food here is like, they have a lot of food that's bad for you. That's just so good here.
That's everywhere.
But all the food is good here. So, like, and they specialize. There's a lot of good
food. But there's a lot
stuff.
Of food there that's good for you that's better in Japan probably than other places. I mean, you know, just traditional sushi is very healthy for you.
Of course. Same so that's what I'm doing now. I'm trying to eat, like, you know, for lunch, I'm trying to have, like, fish. And instead of going and having ice cream or, like, a bag of potato chips, I'm going to have apple or four apples.
Apples are good for you. Apple diet. It'll do it. That'll do the trick.
So I'm trying, and, you know, ideally, I said this last year too, like I wanted to lose weight before E3. So now I have two reasons to lose weight for E3, and not like I'm going to be out on the beach or anything, but, you know, nobody sees me here.
Well, I have the beach season coming up, so I need to lose a little.
What beach season?
The beach season in Atlantic Beach, Long Beach.
You go to the beach? You're a beach guy?
Well, not really, but my parents live on the beach, so if I see my folks, my wife already has plans. She already bought beach baby stuff. We have a beach baby tent. Did you know these things it existed?
Sounds like a waste. Something you just sort of flush that money right down the toilet.
It's crazy, and it's this thing, and it folds up into this little circle. And then you, like, throw it on the ground, and it pops open into this little tent. It's actually kind of cool.
Right.
And,
you're going to try to get in there.
And you're supposed to stick the baby in there if it gets too hot out.
I see.
So they cook evenly.
More like steamed, baby.
Exactly.
What else, Wombat? I don't know. I didn't really pull any feedback from the last show, although I know that we lost all five of our black listeners because I asked you if the woman who was propositioning you for a free fish sandwich at Wendy's, I asked you if she was black, and that upset a lot of our black listeners, and they said they're not listening anymore. So now I'm free to really be racist, I guess.
Ha ha ha!
I don't know what to say. Look, if you're offended by that, I mean, there's a lot of things on here, this show, that are probably way more offensive. So I don't know. If you can't hang with that, then I don't know what to tell you, Wombat.
I don't know. What can you tell me?
Nothing. I started watching a new TV show that's gaming related. I could tell you that.
What did you watch?
I'm watching the WC Gamer Ultimate Gamer show.
What is that?
It's a reality television show. It's basically like Real World mixed with not Survivor. See, I don't even watch any of these shows. What's the one on the Road Rules? What's just the one where they fight each other? They fight each other. Real World Road Rules Challenge, right? They have the competition.
Yeah, that's a show. Yes.
Okay, it's like that, but they do video game stuff. So they have all these gamers who are supposedly, like, you know, really skilled gamers who, like, they win tournaments and shit. And they all live in a house together. And every show, they play a game for, you know, as part of the competition. And then they do a real world competition that's somehow related to the game. So if it's like Project Gotham Racing 4, they'll play the game and they'll also have to drive a real race car and do some sort of event with that.
What channel might this show be on?
It's on the Sci-Fi channel.
Oh, is that Sci-Fi SCIFI or Sci-Fi SYFY?
You know, for all I know, the show is already done. I don't even know because I'm getting it through nefarious means. But I'm a sucker for, like, watching young stupid kids yell at each other and cry. So I like it. Although the hottest chick is off the show already.
You know, I watched a little bit of that new Wolverine cartoon.
I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, I didn't either because I don't get Nicktoons anymore. But they actually, on the official website, you can watch all the full episodes. So it's not even remotely nefarious, actually. But I watched the first episode, and Wolverine, he's riding his motorcycle, and he puts on a helmet.
And then you turn that off?
Basically, because I'm trying to figure out why a man with a metal skull needs to wear a helmet on
well,
a motorcycle.
Well, it's the law in a lot of places, so maybe he doesn't want to break the
and,
law.
You know, Wolverine's afraid of getting pulled over.
Right. So that's pretty weird. Did you ever watch that, the Hulk versus Wolverine?
No, I never had really the option to watch it.
You should rent that from, you don't have Netflix anymore. You have to cancel that.
It's not even that. I don't even have I don't have the time to watch anything that I'd have to watch by myself.
I understand.
I don't have that 2 hours.
All right, Wombat, should we move into new releases?
Sure.
Okay, because, you know, we got the Nelson interview and, you know, takes up time. So I don't know if there's much in the way of new releases this week. So this should move very quickly. It's Dynasty Warriors Gundam 2 for PS2, PS3, and 360, which is – the first one was – I thought was awful. It was like Dynasty Warriors, but they took out all the best parts of Dynasty Warriors. You know, it's the same basic gameplay, but they took out, like, a lot of the...
There is really nothing.
And then there's nothing. ExciteBots for Wii, which is... What is it? It's ExciteTruck, right? But
a little bit. I think it's supposed to be better than that, but, yeah.
But, so that's for the Wii, and then, you know, that's about it.
Yep. I love horses for the
what's
DS.
There's something for... What's the Xbox... Do we even know what the Xbox... Live Arcade releases?
I don't know what it is offhand. No.
It's early this week.
Yeah.
Our show. I know last week was OutRun.
Yeah, which I didn't pick up. Did you?
Nah, I don't know. I like playing the original in the arcade, but I don't know. I don't see myself looking for a game like that on Xbox Live Arcade. You know?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Let us see... What else we got this week? Let's move into... Wait, where am I here? Okay, let's do some game shopping news, Wombat.
Yeah, there's at least one good deal that I know of.
Okay, so what, for the Sunday ad deals?
Yes.
Well, you can go. You can say it. Why
well,
not
Well, I saw
it?
That Toys R Us was selling Guitar Hero World Tour game and guitar for $50.
Yeah, there's a lot of Guitar Hero games this week in the Sunday ads, and I think it's just because... You know, that stuff takes up a lot of space on the store shelves, and, you know, they can only sit on it for so long before it starts, you know, being a burden. So you have that. Also at Toys R Us, the DS versions, the On Tour and Decades, the bundles that have the actual guitar hand thingy, $20 each, you know, for both versions. And they also... At Best Buy, they're throwing in Guitar Hero Aerosmith for free when you buy Guitar Hero Metallica, and they have $25 off those. I think those are the Guitar Hero 3 guitars for PS3, 360, and Wii, and the $25 off the Kramer PS2 guitar.
How much space in the warehouse do you think those Guitar Hero guitars and sets take up?
A lot.
Yeah,
especially,
I know.
Especially the band kits are big.
I guarantee you they're just that the whole set's going to drop in price. I mean, well, Walmart was selling it for $100.
Yeah.
So it's only a matter of time.
I was looking on the front page of CAG to, you know, to get the Sunday ad deals. And supposedly there's going to be some new Xbox Live VIP membership. Is a rumor going around?
That's a rumor. But I don't think it's, you know.
Did you read about it?
It's wait, let's see if I could how good my memories is. It's like better connectivity for some better room setup or something weird.
Okay, here it is. According to I don't know, this is from a post over at the Hip Hop Game Show. According to a customer survey done in France, Microsoft is considering a new level of Xbox Live called the VIP service. The upgraded version, you'll get online storage for your content. A brand new matchmaking option, an option that allows the user to send free invitations to silver members, and better connectivity. I mean...
Whatever better connectivity means, but... I mean, online storage would be... kind of cool, I guess, but
I don't know. It seems sort of. I mean, if they do that, they got to make the regular gold, Xbox Live Gold free, don't they? I mean, it's going to be too confusing. I don't know. It seems like a bad idea.
I heard the original name was Premier Internet Membership Program.
Pimp? Didn't I do that as an April Fool's joke?
Yes, you did, about 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's good.
Welcome to referencing your own joke.
Thank you, good work. So that's pretty much the best of the Sunday ad deals. Also, you should know that Target is starting a new pre-order program on select titles where you put a dollar, you reserve a game for a dollar, and then when you come back and buy the game, they give you a $5 gift card. Which is okay. I mean, you know, Amazon just gives you like $4 off the game straight up on a lot of, you know, new releases. So I don't know. You know, it's not exactly going to set the world on fire, but hey, it's something if you like shopping at Target. Also, you should know, and it's, I'm not sure if it's 100% up and running yet, but the ECA, the, what is it? The electro, how do you, what does that stand for, Wombat?
I have no idea.
You don't know what the ECA is?
Nope.
It's the Entertainment Consumers Association. It's basically a lobbyist group for gaming, for gamers. If you get a year membership with them, if you sign up, they have all these different discounts. And one of the discounts that they have, which is awesome, it's a 10% off discount on all gaming stuff at Amazon. You know, probably not consoles, but software. And the way it's going to work, and right now it's sort of, there's some technical issues with it, but the way it's going to work is you're going to get a unique code that sort of attaches to your Amazon account, and that will give you a 10% off discount for as long as you're a member, I guess.
Yeah, but how much is a membership?
It's $20.
For a year?
Yeah.
And I can get 10% off on, say, Microsoft point cards?
I think you can. I mean, I pre-ordered the 250.
You know, I get $2 off. That would be something.
Yeah, look, you just buy a couple games, it pays for it. I pre-ordered the $250 Beatles bundle, the Beatles Rock Band bundle, and I got 10% off. It's $25.
That's 25. I was gonna say that's $25 off. You pre-ordered that, huh?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you I just did it as just to see if it worked. Like I was just sort of testing it out, and the shipping they will ship that to Japan, which is
for
unusual.
How much?
No, that's the thing. It was like $30. So.
That's not bad. Yeah,
no. Dude, it cost when my parents send us like Cheerios, it cost $30. So it's ridiculous is what it is. So I did it. I mean, and I love the Beatles, so I'm
and
totally
you watched the footage?
I watched the footage. I guess Paul McCartney did a concert at Coachella. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, the Coachella Festival. I believe that's in California.
And playing on a screen behind him was Beatles Rock Band. It looked good, right? I mean, it's the Beatles.
Yeah, it does.
Playing
it
Rock
does
Band.
Look, I mean, I am looking forward to the game. I don't know if I'm going to... I don't know if I can really buy the bundle as much as I would really like the... If they have just the base and game bundle, because I'm a big fan of the Honor base, but I don't know.
Do you have, like, the drums and shit? You have all that shit already?
I have Rock Band 1 drums.
Okay.
Do I really need more than that?
Right. It's game's not coming out for a while, so I figure I could always cancel, but
that is true.
I'm gonna get it and we'll see, you know, with the song list. And they say there's a rumor that I guess they're gonna have harmonies, vocal harmonies, and so like more than one person can sing.
Well, it comes with a mic stand, and really what I think that lends itself to, and I'm surprised no one's talked about this, because I know this is something that you used to do with Rock Band. Was mm-hmm. You would wear your Xbox Live headset and you would sing and play the guitar at the same time?
Yep.
But now with a mic stand, it's probably going to be even easier to sing and play the guitar at the same time. And
absolutely.
I think that's what, you know, they're really going for with this, is to have, instead of requiring four people to have a full band set, you could have three people require, you know, to do a full band or the vocal harmonies, and then you have two mics, and that could be even more fun.
Yeah, and the lips mic are supposed to work. The wireless lips mic is supposed to work with Rock Band, so it'd be great. I'm looking forward to it. All right, should we roll our interview with Nelson?
Why, yes, please.
All right. Now, should we do it all at once, or should we break it up Maybe we should just run the whole thing.
Let's run the whole thing. It's not a turd. We don't have to bust it in half.
You say you thought it went well, is what you're saying?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
No, so, I was referring to your turds.
All right, so we're going to talk to Nelson, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the March NPD numbers. All right, here we go. All right, Wombat, I'm very excited today because we have a very special guest joining us.
Oh, I'm neither special nor a guest.
No, you're not. You're not. But you're not the person I'm talking about. Joining us today is Nelson Rodriguez. Now, if you've listened to the Achievement Junkies podcast, you already know who this guy is. And if you don't, I think you're still going to enjoy this interview because Nelson has done something that few people have been able to do. I mean, you hear all the time about game journalists and, you know, game people who write reviews about video games, write for game websites, getting jobs in the gaming industry. But you don't really hear that often about video game podcasters getting a job. And Nelson did just that. So, Nelson, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And even more rare, you didn't point out, even more rare is to subsequently be fired from the same industry.
right. He also he uplifted his whole life to take this job with Microsoft and then got fired. But I think
we're getting ahead
of ourselves. So first, let's start at the very beginning. And what is it that made you want to get into the fabulous world of video game podcasting?
And what were you doing at the time?
What was I? I was trying to figure out a way to be more physically attractive to women, sort of, you know, just sexually attractive, I guess I should, just to be more direct about it. So what I was doing at the time was I was doing my own thing, basically. I was bored out of my mind. I had quit a job in 2004, I guess. I quit a job where I had been for a long time, was making a ton of money. And I, you know, I had my midlife crisis at 30.
What kind of job and, are we talking about?
I was working for a marketing creative services company that basically it was like a staffing company that specialized in marketing and creative services. So oh, okay. I was a manager for Northern California, right? So it's like, picture me as Michael Scott from The Office.
Okay.
That would have been my job, but instead of paper, it was staffing.
So like, so you managed the like headhunters?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I managed salespeople and recruiters and service people for, it was like three branches in Northern California. It was like 100 people or something that we had out in the field. Very exciting stuff. But I'd been there since I was super young. Like I came almost straight out of college. A couple years after college, I got to this job. And it was fun and all that. But after 8 years, I just started to get bored with it.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate.
You can relate to that?
Yes.
Yes, I've heard your milk sniffing exploits.
Well, now Wombat works for a gay company, so he can have gay sex on his lunch hour, which is, you know, adds a lot of excitement.
He is proof that eventually everyone finds their way to their passion, finds their way into the job they love.
Bungholes.
Well, if you give out the karmic energy about what you care about and love the most, it will come to you. Anyway,
well, that's what sort of happened with you, actually. We're joking, but you were a big gamer, and...
Yeah. Well, so the story is I quit my boring job, started my own business because I thought that would be exciting, and then I got bored with that, and I decided that I wanted to start blogging about video games just as an interest. I thought if the thing that I do for money, I was convinced basically after 10 years of working and then doing my own business that I just couldn't find something that I was going to enjoy. So I thought, well, let me just do this as my side thing. You know, like if I can't find my passion at my job, why don't I just do a hobby that I care about? So I started writing about video games. And within about a month of writing for Planet Xbox 360, this website that just happened to be hiring somebody, I started up a podcast for them. And I started it up with my woman at the time, she's my wife now, but she was my lady. And she was the only person around who would be willing to record with me. And she happened to just kind of naturally be pretty decent at it. And we started recording a show every week.
And that was Achievement Junkies.
And that was Achievement Junkie. Yeah, exactly. Which everybody adds an S to the end of it,
oh,
but it's singular.
It's achievement junkie.
Is an achievement junkie. She just rides his coattails.
She's just a junkie.
No, no. She wants to know, by the way, why you guys didn't invite the better of the two hosts onto the show.
We only invite people who have been fired from major corporations.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. Well, she can work on that.
We didn't think that she would say yes.
Yeah, exactly. Not with Wombat on, she would not say yes. This is very, very, very creepy to her.
So now achievement junkies really took off.
No S.
Yeah.
No S.
It's achievement junkie because it represents the achievement junkie in each individual listening, right?
Right. I understand.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Like cheap-ass gamers.
Yeah, cheap-ass gamers. It isn't cheap-ass gamers, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So the show took off pretty fast. We were kind of surprised by it because we wanted to get up to 250 listeners. That was our goal because that was like, it was the number of a part of the house where we lived. So we were like, if once we get to 250, that's it, man. We made it. We've arrived, right? And then it got to 2,500 and then it got to, it essentially capped out around 20,000, wow, listeners, which
kicks our ass.
Does it?
Yes. We have about 13,000. Wait, hold on. We lost Wombat. I gotta get Wombat back on here.
Yes, I'm back now.
Yeah. So why we should have just gone on without this guy?
I know.
Which is what you should have done a long time ago, by the way. You know what? I should. Are you recording?
Yes.
I should mention this. This is actually an important fact. Your show was the first show that I ever heard that was a video game podcast.
And you said I could do better.
Yeah, exactly. I said, here's a show with a dude and some chick on it, and they're obviously not very good, so it means anybody can do this. So I jumped in. We were subscribed to your show through TiVo. Did you ever try the TiVo podcast thing?
Uh-uh.
So TiVo has this podcasting feature, and we were TiVo fanatics at the time. So your show was the only show that we were subscribed to. And when your show was supposed to be out and it wouldn't come out that day or it was late, we'd be like, those fucking motherfuckers, what is the deal with the show? Because we really liked it. Like, we looked forward to it. It was like appointment television, but it happened to be just audio.
Wow.
And yeah, I swear to God.
Would you listen to our show and then make sweet, sweet love?
We only after.
Oh, not during? I'm a little disappointed.
He's got to focus, Wombat.
I could just picture Nelson at home going, man, that chick sounds hot.
Little Jewy, but hot.
Yeah, more than a little. So I'm from New York, and hearing you guys talk was literally, I was late to the party, to the podcast party. I was not into blogs or anything like that, but just, I don't know how I stumbled on you guys because I'm cheap as fuck. And so I was always looking for deals, and I ended up on your website and then ended up on your podcast. And you guys were just so natural, and you were voices that were sort of familiar to me coming from New York.
Yeah.
That's when I realized, like, man, this is the way that is exciting now. The technology is easy, it's cheap, and it's easy to get your voice out to other people. And I figured if I could connect with these two dudes who were sitting somewhere way far away from me, I figured other people could maybe have that experience with us.
So yeah, so you started the show. It blew up very quickly. You have 20,000 listeners. Now you're internet famous.
Yes, internet famous, exactly.
So how did you find that experience? I mean, you getting a lot of fan mail, you're getting a lot of people kissing your ass.
No, you know what? I mean, it was a lot of, at first, the thing that was hard to get used to was the negativity, which I remember talking to you about this.
Yep.
Because you love it when people bash you. And at the time, it would make me so pissed off. Like, I wanted to punch somebody in the face. Even when somebody said, they would give us a 4-star review on iTunes and they would say, yeah, this was really good. I just wish Nelson was not so serious. And I'd be like, I want to punch you in your fucking face, motherfucker.
I'll show you how serious I am. Kick your ass.
Yeah, exactly.
I get mopey still.
I think that's something that people don't understand when they start doing a podcast. If people actually listen to you, they're going to critique you, and you got to have a thick skin. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy. Now, Wombat gets critiqued all the time, bashed even, and so do I. But I think I'm sort of insulated a little bit because I run the website. So Wombat is more of like the whipping boy because people know, like, if they rip on Wombat, they're not going to get banned. Well, some people have. Right. Some people have really ripped into Wombat bad, and we had to ban them because it was, you know, it was borderline criminal.
Yeah.
So all right. So you have some internet fame. You're learning to deal with criticism. Now, how does Microsoft get involved?
I snuck my way into an event in San Francisco. We lived just outside of San Francisco, and which was really fortunate because there were all these gaming events constantly happening nearby. And I knew a dude just through a friend of a friend who worked in the game industry, and he just happened to be going to this event and said, "Hey, you know, I know you're into video games and you're doing that podcast thing. Do you want to go to this thing? I'll sneak you in." It was the Lost Planet launch party. Mm-hmm. And I go in, like, I pretend that I work with this guy, and I go into the event, and the GamerScore blog team from Microsoft is at the event. So John Porcaro is there, Tony Hines, and Chris Palladino. And Chris had emailed me a few weeks before, and he said that he was going to be in San Francisco, and I thought, like, wow, I got an email from this dude at Microsoft, you know? I thought it was a super big deal, because Chris was obviously, like, already a known figure in the industry. So I walk into this event, the three dudes are there, and John pulls out his Zune and shows me that he listens to Achievement Junkie, which, you know, for me it was a huge deal at the time. Like, I just couldn't even conceive of the idea that the people in these companies who were working on these multi-million dollar projects would even be listening to people like us.
By the way, he pulled the same move on me at Tokyo Game Show like 3 or 4 years ago. 3 years ago, I guess it was.
But you put out, right?
Right. I gave him a massage in the bathroom.
Yes. Yeah. And a happy ending.
To your knees you went.
Yeah. So it was cool. We ended up, you know, exchanging emails. I interviewed them for my show, and we ended up striking up sort of a internet friendship. Mm-hmm. And when a job became available in their department, they contacted me.
All right. So now they make you a job offer, and this is like a dream come true, right? I mean, you quit your job basically because you hated it, and you started doing video game blogging and podcasting, and you probably never thought that this would lead to a way that you would actually earn some income from it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that realistically, I thought that you could earn income. I mean, at some level, right? Like, I always believe that if you do something, if you're focused on something, you could probably squeeze out a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there. But I never thought it was, you know, a huge paycheck with benefits type of a situation. You know, that was not in my mind at all. So when I got that phone call from them, I remember it clearly. I was standing at the Costco, and in California, and I got this call from Tony, who mentioned that he's thinking about hiring somebody. Would I be interested in it? So it was crazy.
So you're like, oh my God, but now you gotta quit. They make you, you know, you can't really do your Achievement Junkie anymore, right? You have to stop doing that if you want to join the Microsoft team, because then it becomes sort of like a conflict of interest, I guess. You'll be privy to certain information, and it could accidentally slip out, or people would think that you're slipping even if you're not, or...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was on my mind. It was, the funny thing is, because of my perspective at the time, the first thing that I said to Tony was, "Well, dude, I'll consider the job, but I can't stop podcasting. You have to let us continue to podcast because
you're a star.
You know, people really, because I'm a star, and I don't want to lose my fame. You know, that was my idea. Was like that. I had to keep my voice going.
And you weren't making any money from the podcast, right?
No, it was, I think at that time we were probably making a few hundred dollars here and a few hundred dollars there, because we were doing like Libsyn ads and affiliate programs.
Gotcha.
But it wasn't big money. It wasn't big money, but it was the idea that people knew me, and I was receiving mail from the UK and from Singapore and from all
and
over the
ladies.
World. It was this idea. And plus, I was getting ladies everywhere I went.
Right. Yeah. We did a survey on CAG. We found out that 98% of the users and listeners of the CAGcast are men.
Yeah. Yeah. Only because of Wombat, though.
But those 2% women, man, they want it.
Oh, yeah. They're
ready to go.
You're just jealous.
Oh, they're fired up.
I can hear the jealousy.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So Microsoft offers you this job. You accept the job. You move to Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
And what exactly is the job?
So the GamerScore blog team was built specifically to create that bridge between what was like traditional marketing and PR and that user-created content. You know, so you got user-created content where a dude goes on and swears and says whatever he wants and talks about the red rings, and then you got marketing content where some multiracial family that was brought together through a casting agency sits in a house and plays like a family-friendly game, right? Those are these two extremes, and then the team was essentially designed to try to create a bridge between those, like the old world of PR and marketing and this new world of user-created content, to try to find people like you or people like me who had a voice out there, and to build relationships with them. So it was like PR and marketing, but very specifically focused at end users, focused on power users, I guess is the way to look at it.
People like Wombat.
People more significant than Wombat. But,
I kind of don't like where this interview has gone. I just want to...
I will point out, Wombat, that you were my main contact for CAG, right?
That is true, yes.
Well, that's because I was sleeping while you were awake.
Well, and I didn't want to pay for shipping to Japan.
But I was the one reaching out and finding prizes.
Exactly.
Yeah, Wombat needed his free stuff, and he had your name on as the messenger, so do the math.
For some reason, Paladino won't return my emails.
I wonder why.
Okay, so your job basically is to reach out to people who run, I guess, like, you know, smaller gaming websites, community-based websites. I mean, I don't know what you really classify these people as, and sort of be their PR contact. Is that right? That's how you started, though, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so just to give you a sense of it, before I joined the team, my team worked with places like Destructoid, right? When they were nobody, they were not big, they were brand new. That was the kind of thing that my team was responsible for managing sites like that, because they weren't big enough for PR to pay attention to them. Because, you know, the PR agencies and the PR managers within the company are looking to maximize their time. They want the New York Times, they want the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, so they can't manage 150 or 300 smaller blogs. So that was the kind of stuff that we did.
Okay. So what's it like? You have your dream job, and it's sort of amazing because you wind up at one of the biggest companies in the world. I think, you know, they're in the top 50 largest companies in the world. So it's got to be, I mean, I've never personally worked for a huge company, but I got to imagine it must be incredibly frustrating, because from time to time, I have to deal with some big companies, you know, like some big major retailers. And I know, like, I used to deal with EB Games, for example. And they were
like
great.
When you're trading in games?
No.
I'm buying a Wii? No. Trying to buy Wii Play?
No. I'm talking about for CAG, CAG-related issues. Okay. So, for example, I'm dealing with EB Games, and they were really great to deal with. And then as soon as they were acquired by GameStop, it became, like, ridiculous. Teeth. Yeah, I couldn't. If I could get them to write me back, it was a freaking miracle. So...
Yeah,
working with a huge company like Microsoft, the amount of bureaucracy and red tape has got to make you crazy in a way.
It makes you crazy in a big way. The big story about Microsoft, and I think the biggest learning that I got from my time at Microsoft is that I never saw anybody twirling their mustache or rubbing their hands, waiting to screw the people. You know, there's the things that you see wrong or the mistakes that you see made are rarely because somebody was just being callous or capricious. It's usually because there's just tens of thousands of people working on stuff and literally hundreds of people working on the same projects. It's an entrepreneurial culture, so which is cool because you got all these smart people being really motivated, but it's also competitive because it's entrepreneurial. Every team operates like they're an independent business, so you're selling to each other and you're competing with each other all the time. If you want to get something done, it's not just saying, well, this is an obvious thing, this makes sense, we should do it. You have to sell it and make sure that another team isn't going to be, you know, pissed off because you're doing it. And you got to make sure that the four people above you and the 18 people that are your peers all buy into the thing that you're trying to do.
So theoretically, someone could have built a console that worked for Microsoft. But the team that built that just didn't sell it well enough to the rest of the company.
Well, have you ever read the Dean Takahashi book on about the building of the first Xbox and the second one?
No.
So that book, I mean, I don't know how true it was because it was written during a time where I wasn't at the company, but there are components of it that felt very familiar. And, you know, supposedly when the first Xbox was built, there was a team over at WebTV who was doing the same thing. They were trying to build, you know, their own set-top box connected device. So you had two teams building the same thing at the same time.
Should have went with the WebTV one, I guess.
Well, I don't. Well, it was the first Xbox. I mean, I don't know if it had a lot of. Yeah, yeah. So it can be. It could be very frustrating. A good, you know, when things popped up, like when Xbox Live had its issues, it was the community. If you remember, responded when Xbox Live went down, and it was the holidays, right?
Right.
Last year
the community responded. It was it last year, 2008.
2 years ago. No, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. We were watching the community blow up about it, right? We're watching the community say, why the hell isn't anybody saying anything? And meanwhile, we weren't alone in this, but there were, you know, there were dozens of us inside the company saying, like, can we say this? Well, can we say this? Can we say that? Well, what about this message? And there were emails being written and blog posts being written. And it was just going through loops and loops and loops of approval processes to try to get something said about it. And you know, meanwhile, you have to consider not just the bureaucracy, not just the size of the company, but the fact that it's a publicly traded company. If we went out and put a blog post up that said something that got Wall Street excited or upset, it could cost millions of dollars, right?
Yep.
So that's a perfect example of the kind of thing that you have to face if you're working in an organization like that.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about like I remember like the community response to that. I mean, where the Xbox fans go to complain at this point is pretty much Major Nelson's blog. Yeah. And that's a lot of entertainment right there. If you ever want to see like some upset people, you know, anytime there's some like, you know, arcade game or content that's released only in the United States, it's always good time to go to MajorNelson.com and you just read the comments from all the Europeans. You know, I'm canceling my Xbox account. You know, you suck. How come you don't fix this? This is bullshit. I own 300 Xbox games. I'm going to burn them. And I'll never buy another Microsoft product again.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, two things about that kind of feedback. One is that was how I learned to deal with negative criticism is like, people complain about everything, anything that ever came out. You know, Gears of War 1, people were complaining about it, and screenshots come out and people are complaining about it, and you see people that you respect in the industry doing stuff and still they can't make everybody happy. And that's interesting to see when you see people complain. A second thing about that, the level of complaint, is that it clouds the conversation in a way that I think is harmful to consumers. I think that the people that are complaining rabidly don't realize how much they're discounting their own message, so that companies are forced to say, wow, look at these whack nuts. Let's not pay attention to what they're saying because they're obviously insane. And, you know, like because it's hard to find like civil discourse on some of these problems. And I love it when people like when Joystick identifies a problem and really focuses on it with some of the stuff that you guys talk about. When you focus on a problem in a way that's intelligent and competent, I love it because it can't be ignored. And a lot of the stuff that you're talking about that you see those complaints makes it so that it's just you set it to off. And I think a lot of PR people just set it to off and go, I'll never read the forums because people are retarded.
Right. Well, I can't believe that we actually did something useful, but if you say so, I guess.
I would like an example of what we've ever done that was useful. If you,
well, you know, so a good example is you're talking about the NXE slowness, right? I mean, you know, the way that you couched it was entertaining. It's interesting and funny, but it's also a relevant topic to anybody who's using the system, and I think it's hard to ignore.
Yeah, and people responded in our forum, you know, to the show, and some people said that they had the problem, and some people said that they didn't have the problem. The people who said they didn't have the problem said, "Oh, I have this particular system, this has the built-in memory, maybe that's the issue," so on and so forth.
Exactly.
So, I think your job changed at Microsoft, right? I mean, while you were working there. You went from sort of being a liaison to sites like CAG and Destructoid and whatnot to being like a, what do you call that? Like a show host on Inside Xbox.
A personality.
Yes.
So you're doing this, what was Pick Up and Play?
Pick Up and Play.
Which was like the casual game, like a little preview of a casual game, Xbox Live Arcade game. And you also were trying to figure out a way to market games to a more casual audience, right? I mean, beyond just that TV show or fake TV show.
So the team was always experimental. The whole purpose of it was to try to figure out how you could take the voice of consumers and the voice of power users and integrate it into the way marketing was being done and the feedback loop to make sure that the company knew what customers were thinking. So we were doing that. But as time went on, we saw the emergence of video. So there was blogs, then there was podcasts, then there was video. And we kept trying to figure out, when I joined, we tried to do like user-created video projects. We get people to submit their own videos so we could start to compile them. And at the time, it was, a lot of user-created videos sucked. You know, that's a lot of stuff that we got in. If people ever actually deliver the things they promise they're going to deliver. You know what I'm saying, Wombat? You ever?
I have no idea. No, I don't. I don't know. I always do what I say I'm going to do. So
yeah. So if you ask someone to do it, you know, you ask 50 community people to do it, and you only get one video, or you get the videos and the quality's not good enough. It triggered us to start creating some of our own stuff to see if we could make stuff that was a little more less marketing, but maybe not all the way to the user created side, that middle ground. And one of the outlets for it was Inside Xbox, just because they were launching the channel and didn't have enough content. So they came to us to see, because they saw that we were experimenting with content. They wanted to see if we could create a show.
So you did that, and it was cool. I used to watch them. I was a big fan of Pick Up and Play, and you even gave me a shout out one or two times, I think. Which was
on the show, yeah.
Which is, you know, anytime somebody talks about me, I'm immediately interested in what they're doing. At least for that brief moment when you mention my name, and then I sort of tune out after that. But
yeah,
so you're doing content on Inside Xbox. I mean, do you find yourself, is there like competition between all the people who do their own little shows on Inside Xbox? Because you got Trixie does a show or like a little video. I mean, they're not really shows. They're like video tidbits or something. You got Major Nelson does his thing. Are you guys all like jockeying for position? Like I'm the premier Xbox personality. No, I am.
Well, I was always, our show was always a guest show. So we were not a part of the team that produces Inside Xbox. So we had to kind of, be as nice as we could be and just play along, because there was nothing, we didn't control the distribution of the content. We just put that piece of content out and hoped that they would pick it up. So for our side, it's kind of hard to say that we were competing, but certainly as a human being, there's a competitive feel. Like you want to do well, and you want people to say, man, that was my favorite show, or that was my favorite show. And I think my experience at Microsoft for, I guess, 18 months is that it's a highly competitive environment, and everybody's always trying to make sure that the thing they do stands out as being the coolest thing or the hot new idea.
Do you ever butt heads with? I mean, you're Minor Nelson. You ever butt heads with Major Nelson? I mean, I've met him few times, and he's, you know, we got along.
Nice guy, right?
Nice guy. We got along well. Wombat's even met him too. Wombat called him a vagina clown.
I have.
And then he had a beer with him, and they made nice.
Yeah, no, I never had any, like, I never butted heads with Larry, because Larry's a super nice guy. Like, I've interacted with him in social settings. Excuse me. And he's very nice. I've met his wife. Like, it's very different, like, to interact with somebody outside of the workplace. But in the workplace, he and I never had direct conflict. But I know that there was a perception out in the community that there was this competitive thing going on. And that the perception of it probably in a way creates that attitude within you.
Yeah, I always,
like, for me,
I always felt that you were sort of the future of Xbox. I mean, look, Major Nelson, you know, we're, you know, a nice guy and all, but he's no spring chicken anymore. He's got gray hair. What do you call that? It's like salt and pepper hair, right?
Yeah. Well, he's the Billy Mays though of Xbox.
Who's Billy Mays?
He's the Billy Mays. Who the hell's that?
He's the infomercial guy, or the Vince Offer.
Oh.
No. But
like the Orange Clean or whatever?
Yes, exactly. OxyClean.
OxyClean, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Billy Mays is the OxyClean guy.
I always thought that Nelson was being groomed to take over. Like that Major Nelson would step aside. He's like, all right, you know, I'm getting up there. Like, I don't know how old he is, but he's got to be like 45, right? Or something like that. And, yeah, you know, games are a young man's business. And certainly I'm 35. I'm not a young man. But I don't know. I always felt like he would sort of move aside. And then you got Nelson Rodriguez. He's got like the ethnic thing going on, you know, which Microsoft seems to like. I don't know. I thought it was like a done deal, basically. And you were obviously great on the air, very comfortable.
Thanks.
So then, you know, there's all these rumors going around that there's going to be some major layoffs at Microsoft.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm thinking, uh-oh, not my friend Nelson.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Not the only person in the company that will talk to me.
Right. I have nothing left. I have no contacts. The one contact that we had at Microsoft, it was Arnie at Edelman, actually.
Who's a very nice guy.
Who's awesome.
Who's a super, super nice guy.
And they fired that division of Edelman. That division of Edelman lost the deal, so we lost our PR contact. And now we wind up losing Nelson, too.
Yeah, it was the day of the layoffs. There was the rumor, right? It was on the news. It was everywhere, basically.
Yep.
So I'm on the way to work, and everybody's Twittering each other, or, you know, direct messaging, IMing, like, did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see this? And then we get into work, and we get the email that says, email shows up to Chris that says, hey, Chris, we've got really important stuff to discuss with you. Could you come to my office at 10:30? And then I get an email that says, hey, Nelson, we've got really important stuff to discuss with you. Could you come to the office at 11?
At 10:33.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't bring any sharp objects with you. We can have a metal detector set up.
Bring a box.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, no kidding. You know, the interesting thing for us, though, is that we ended up getting we were given 2 months at the job, and we had the opportunity to try to take on another gig within the company. And in fact, a lot of people that I know ended up doing that. There were just sort of jobs on the table that I didn't really pursue because I wanted to do the work that we were doing. I didn't want to do something totally different.
Right.
And that was, you know, so that was the offer, right? It's like, hey, dude, you're totally, what you're doing now is completely out the window. But if you want to work on Viva Pinata 4 as a marketing manager, that's totally available, you know? I mean, and I'm making that up, but that was kind of what the offer was. So,
oh, I thought maybe you could have been the guy that puts the hologram sticker on the back of all the software boxes.
That'd be cool. You mean even the Chinese knockoffs?
Yes.
The fake holograms? Yeah. Yeah, there was opportunities to work within marketing or PR, but in a very different job. Because our job was really unique, you know, like experimental community marketing. And I think what you're talking about, this perception of competition between us and other teams, I think that played a role. Certainly wasn't money. I mean, I don't think that Microsoft's out of money by any means. I just think it was an opportunity for them to shift strategic focus away from this experimental gamer enthusiast stuff, and to be able to focus a lot more of their attention on the broad consumer. If you look at the studios that they've closed, if you look at the games that they continue to develop and the games that they stop developing, regardless of sales figures, you see that there's a shift.
What do you think about that? I mean, Microsoft clearly is trying to hone in on some of this Wii, you know, casual market. You look at, you know, the Xbox Vista with the avatars, and, you know, you see these, you know, there's a push to that. I mean, I always personally felt that it's a waste of time for them to try to do that. They're not Nintendo. They don't have the Nintendo name. There's nothing about Microsoft is going to convince, you know, a family that this is going to be a more family-friendly item than something that has a Nintendo sticker on it. I mean, So what's with Microsoft? Why do they? How do they? If I understand this, how are they missing out on it?
I think that Microsoft has a really long play that none of us is we don't think in the same terms. I think that the senior management at Microsoft thinks they are looking 15 years out. They got into the console business before the PS3 was a glimmer in PlayStation's eye, right? Like PlayStation 1 is what essentially triggered Microsoft to start getting into the console business, because they understood that eventually these consoles were going to be mini computers. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft's in the computer business. The last thing they want is for your home computer 7000 that also runs on your toilet. They don't want that to run Unix. You know, they don't want it to run someone else's operating system. They want it to run Windows, right? So I think that they're looking way out. So it's not the issue of, like, can we beat the Wii? It's the issue of, can we stop the Wii from dominating the living room?
I see.
I mean, that's my opinion. You know, my opinion is that.
All right. Let's take a few. I got a few questions from our listeners.
Right.
And so let me run through these. Nibby wants to know, what was it like growing up as a gamer in the Bronx during the 80s? What was it like in the barrio, Nelson?
In the barrio. Well, I wasn't in the barrio, but I was in the Bronx, which is in New York, right? It's a different neighborhood. You guys know, you know the barrio, right?
We're both from Long Island. We don't know shit.
Oh, so you don't? Yeah. All right. Well, so to me, growing up as a gamer in the Bronx was almost natural. Like for many of my friends, video games were an easy way to distract yourself from the stuff going on outside in the street, or to entertain yourself. I mean, in our homes, we didn't have, for like a lot of the time, we didn't have a car. We did, you know, we couldn't go out to the countryside. We couldn't take fancy vacations. So games were just this excellent way to bring entertainment into the house. For, you know, it was still $40 at the time, which was ridiculously expensive to buy like Donkey Kong, and it wasn't even good. But It was a cool alternative. So it felt completely normal to me. I didn't understand the idea of a nerd until I ended up going to like private school, where I understood that there was this huge distinction. Because for me, back in the neighborhood, we all kind of read comic books, and we all played Atari 2600.
Gotcha. Zavin wants to know what your view is on the new Xbox experience, and have you had the same problems as Wombat and I with slowdown?
The
but
Xbox
overall, I think what's your view on Microsoft's sort of switch over here?
I never had a big issue with it when we first previewed it, which was maybe 6 months before it came out. I was one of the few, I don't know, idiots who was sitting there just smiling. I thought it was fun. I thought it was kind of cute and clever, and I loved the Netflix integration. So when it was first shown to me, I was kind of excited about it. I can't say that the rest of my team felt the same way, but which I think we famously ended up being sort of controversial about. Some of my team members criticized NXE, and now the more I use it, the more issues that I run into with it, like the slowness for me has been an issue.
Yeah.
You know, I can't avoid that. Like when I try to fire it up just to watch a freaking movie, it's slow to start. Then I have to sign in, and it takes 30, 40 seconds to sign in. And then the remote won't work because I got to wait for 10, 20 seconds for it to trigger. That's, for me, that's just not a good user experience. And I honestly think, and Microsoft is still, I still have relationships with Microsoft, and I mean, there's a good chance they could end up being a client of our company, but the stuff that they're doing with NXE could prove to be even harder to convince casual users about, because it's kind of a clunky experience if you use it enough.
Yeah, they just need to fix that lag. If they fix that lag, we're all good, I think.
Well, I think going back to a casual audience, I think if you don't know where you're going on the new NXE, you may have trouble finding where to go just to play a game.
Yeah, there's 12 or 14 button presses to try to do some things that we've gotten used to because like we know how to do it, but it's kind of, I mean, like I've been using the Wii a lot recently, and it's almost, you know, insanely, they assume a pretty stupid audience. Every time you fire up a Wii game, it says, don't break your dog with the controller. And, you know, it instructs you at every stage, but it's it's a lot easier to use.
All right. Hired Geek wants to know, is there any chance of you reviving the Achievement Junkie podcast? And also, what is this new business venture you've started?
What do you guys think? Should we start up Achievement Junkie again?
I think so.
Why not?
I miss Natalie.
You think so?
Well, it sort of depends. It depends on what's the new business venture.
Yeah, that's the trick, right? We want to do something. We want to do a podcast again because we really enjoyed it. Enjoyed doing it. It became stressful to do it after a while because of the conflict of interest issue. But we're sort of floating into those waters again, to be honest with you. I mean, we're hopefully defining our business in a new way, but we're still going to have conflict of interest issues.
Can you talk about what your new business is?
Yeah, so we started Promethium Marketing as soon as our time at Microsoft was up. We launched the business, and we've already got a bunch of... We're basically in contract negotiations with a couple companies, so we're pretty close to signing some big contracts doing community-focused marketing. So it's that idea of building that bridge, the same thing that our team did, building the bridge between what's traditional marketing and user-created content, getting power users engaged, and trying to figure out a way for companies to look out for their brand and look out for their interests while still acknowledging the fact that customers are more important than they've ever been in terms of their voice.
Well, I would just like to say that, you know, while you're pitching these pitching these clients, you should tell them that you know me and that you can get them a good deal on some CAG advertising.
Some really rock bottom advertising.
Oh, I've got the lowest prices in the business, baby. When you got ass in your name, you got to cut people some deals. All right, we're having some technical problems here with the three ways. Anyway, well, okay, you can go to PrometheumMarketing.com, and certainly I've met Nelson many times. He's an incredibly smart guy, and if you're a game publisher, you should definitely hire these guys, and they will they'll do a good job for you. I can say that with extreme confidence, especially if they hook up with me.
If we sell CAG stuff, yeah.
Yes, us. I think you mean us.
Let's do one more question here. Where was this good question? It's one of my favorite questions here. It's from Rich Lowe. And of course, it's my favorite question. He just wants to know, how popular is the CADcast at Microsoft, and what is the general opinion of GPD and Wombat in the industry?
They've never heard of you.
I'm not surprised.
I knew it.
No. I think obviously, as I described, I'm one of your show's biggest fans. So it's I'm skewed on this because I was always introducing CADcast into conversations. But if I took a step back and kind of ignored the parts where I was the one driving the conversation, I mean, you guys have certainly popped up in reports I think the industry as a whole pays attention to CADcast. Well, to Cheap Ass Gamer in particular, right? Because your audience for your website is huge.
It's much bigger than the show, yeah.
Yeah, it's bigger than the show, yeah. So the stuff that goes on your forums and the stuff you put on your front page, I think it's a pretty good amount of attention. And I know that I ran into a lot of people at Microsoft who were fans of the show.
All right. Well, send me their emails and I'll send them a free T-shirt. But
where the F is my free T-shirt?
Well, okay, it's not a free T-shirt. It's a picture of a T-shirt.
Oh, nice.
Is that okay?
I just want to see the report that quotes Cheap Ass Gamer. Well, according to Cheap Ass Gamer, Section 321.
I had a friend that worked for Microsoft. He doesn't work there anymore. He quit, I think. I don't think he got fired. I think he quit.
Oh, well, that makes it much better then.
No. But he didn't even work in the gaming division. I went to college with this guy, and I haven't even spoken to him in a long time. I met up with him at PAX last year, but before then, I hadn't spoken to him since college. So you're talking, I don't know, a long, long time. So he's in a meeting with, like, Steve Ballmer and, I don't know, some of the big shots there, and they're talking, it's about, you know, what's going on in the media with different Microsoft projects. And he's sitting there with all these big shots, and they're watching different TV coverage. And along comes an interview with me on Bloomberg, and I'm talking shit about how Halo 3, like, nobody in Asia gives a shit about Halo 3, basically. Yeah. I mean, it was on Bloomberg, so I didn't, you know, word it that way. And my friend's like, holy shit, I know this guy. And he just kept his mouth shut because he didn't even want to be associated with me.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, yeah. Stuff like that popped up, to be honest, all the time. But my team wanted that. Like, we wanted to show you on Bloomberg saying that stuff because we were trying to prove the point that these were valid messages, that we didn't just effing make it up. We didn't just walk into work with a bat in a bad mood and say, oh, I think the community hates Xbox Live or whatever. We liked to see when we could actually point to something and say, look, see, this is what people are talking about.
Very cool. Well, Nelson, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. I want to tell all of our industry people to go to PrometheumMarketing.com and hire these guys, these marketing guys. They're gonna rock your world.
Make sure you read the buzz on them. There are some great quotes from industry professionals.
There is. Let me see. Great.
Well, we ran out of time and had to use what we could.
Oh, here's a good one from Stuart Nacht, host of the CADcast. In fact, this is the top quote that comes before Larry Herb, a.k.a. Major Nelson, before Aaron Greenberg, before John Picaro. It says, no other team and no other company we have ever worked with have been so quick to understand the connection between community and product movement like they have. Their ability to reach out personally and to various communities is a major reason why the Xbox and Microsoft are major players in the industry. Now, after reading that, one thing is for sure, that Nelson wrote this and just put Wombat's name on the bottom.
That is not true.
I wish
that was true. Yeah. No, that was certainly on the table, but Stuart came back with something really above his level.
Aha. Uh-huh. Wait a minute.
Above his level. I think maybe Mrs. Wombat helped him. It's the only explanation I have.
Yes.
Anyway, I want to thank you, Nelson.
Thank you.
And, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sirs.
All right, we're back, Wombat.
That was long.
Big shout out to Nelson. Thank you for coming on the show. And good best of luck to him and his crew over at Prometheum Marketing.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's get into the March MPD numbers because there's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
There is.
Well, first of all, you've got the Wii kicking everyone's ass again, which is nothing new. 600,000 units sold, and the DS also kicking ass with, you know, coming in second, 563,000 sold. And nothing else new, the 360 is still kicking the PS3's ass with 330,000 to 218,000.
Yes, I mean, but the other thing to keep in mind is that the sales numbers for every console dropped, and they all dropped about the same percentage, about 20%. Mm-hmm. And that's
well, these are big ticket items, and the economy is in shambles right now. People
and here's the other thing: the PlayStation 3 sold about 100,000 less, but it cost twice as much.
True.
So it may not be as bad as it looks. I don't know, total dollar wise, I guess. But
true. Well, here's the interesting part is I think and, is yeah, the software sales, right?
Yes. That's all anyone cares about is software.
All right. So Resident Evil 5 was the big winner. No question about it. The 360 version sold almost 1 million. And the PS3 version sold almost 600,000.
Crazy.
Which is, big time, Wombat.
1.5 million copies sold.
Yeah.
And that's just in this country.
Right. And that's just in this country. And the 360 version sold a lot more, almost twice as much. Which is, I don't know. I mean, that's good for Capcom, I guess. Now, you were telling me something earlier about you think that because the game sold so well that this whole add-on controversy with that versus mode may come back to bite them in the ass?
Well, this is just, this was just my theory. And again, it's more of a posit than a statement. Really, it was because I checked the leaderboards. I guess the last time I checked it actually may have been almost a week ago, so it may be more by now. But last time I checked it, the leaderboards for Resident Evil 5 on the Xbox 360 in the multiplayer maps was 50,000 people.
Okay.
And there, each map has different leaderboards, and the largest leaderboard had 50,000 people, and that's international.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you took 50,000 of a million, approximately a million copies sold, that's still 5%.
Right.
And it's probably less than that if you're looking at it on an international scale, which means if they want to sell more downloadable maps for multiplayer, they're only selling it to that 5% audience, to that 50,000 people, which really would say what's the point of making new maps to sell them when they could have, taken that quote-unquote initial hit on that money that wasn't budgeted towards this downloadable multiplayer, included it, and then hopefully got people hooked into it and had some pretty impressive leaderboards, and then they could have sold maps later for $10 as opposed to $5.
Right.
And made more money.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's not a bad strategy.
And made more money later on. And the other thing that people say is, well, maybe people wouldn't have played the multiplayer, or they wouldn't have cared. I think if it was there on the disc and it was free and a million people had it, you'd try it.
And also, well, the other thing is, the other, you know, to play devil's advocate here, you know, I think we could all agree that this whole versus mode thing didn't really require very much time for them to develop, right? Because it's basically, I mean, I'm not that familiar with the, I actually bought Resident Evil 5. Last week, and we'll talk about that later. So, but I haven't played any of the mercenaries.
Well, the mercenaries yet to finish the game to play.
That would explain why I haven't played it, I guess.
Yes, that would be the.
So I don't know. I mean, this versus mode is basically just the online mode, but I mean, it's basically just mercenaries, but online. Is that what it is? I don't even know.
I honestly haven't had a chance to play it yet. The problem is that no one I know has it, even though they sent me I got a code sent to me from Capcom, which was very nice of them.
But you got to find somebody to play against.
But I have to find someone to play it with, and no one I know has it. And I don't really like to play online multiplayer with strangers, because I'm weird that way. I really don't like people, right. And especially meeting new ones. So I haven't really played it because I haven't had anyone say, hey, let's play multiplayer, or found someone playing the multiplayer that I could join up with. So I haven't really touched it yet. All I've really done with it is look at the leaderboards to see where they are.
Gotcha. Well, okay, so Resident Evil 5 for the 360 is number one. Pokemon Platinum for the DS. Platinum for the DS. It sold 805,000. Pokemon is always just printing
people love
money.
Their Pokemans.
And very surprising, I think, is number three, Halo Wars for the 360, 639,000.
Well, it's that name. That Halo name.
That Halo name is so powerful, even though this is like a totally different game, a real-time strategy game, that the game sold very well. Now, Killzone 2 is the other story here. It was outsold by... Well, okay, that's not fair. Killzone 2 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on the list, okay? Right, 7 on the list, just under 300,000. And if you combine it with the sales from February, because it came out at the end of February, it still sold less than Halo Wars, which is surprising.
And having played both, if my personal opinion, I would probably say Killzone 2 is the better game.
Well, they're totally different games. You shouldn't even compare them.
I can compare whatever I want. You're comparing their numbers, and I think it comes down to, you know... Which one I enjoyed more, I think, is a definite, you know, a reasonable question. If I only have $60 and I can only spend it on one game, I would prefer to play Killzone 2 over Halo Wars.
How was the marketing? How was the marketing of Killzone 2 in America? Was it pretty strong? I mean,
In the I think it was the NPD thread on Cheap Ass Gamer, and they posted the commercial. They really only had the one commercial. The one bullet commercial that they made the video for.
I still think it's a mistake for them to call the game Killzone 2. Because I think a lot of people who have PS3s, or like, but a good deal of them probably never played the first game and really don't know anything about it. So it's like, you know, it's not like you're really... And the first game didn't really do that well. So it's not like you're capitalizing on the fact that there was a Killzone 1.
So they've just called it Killzone?
I think they should have just called Killzone, you know, the Hellgast, good time, happy place or something. You know, obviously not that, but, you know, Killzone : something or other.
And just to give him credit, it was Thomas96 in the NPD thread who posted the commercial.
Okay.
So,
but the baseball game did pretty well. MLB The Show for the PS3 sold 300,000, which I guess is pretty good.
It's supposed to be the far superior game from what I've read, but I haven't played either, so I can't answer.
Then 2K9, you mean?
Huh? MLB 09, yeah. The Show, yes.
And the last big story with the NPD numbers is that Chinatown Wars, GTA Chinatown Wars for the DS, didn't even break 90,000 units in the month.
No, it did not. Now, there's multiple reasons why this may be, though.
Okay.
And, I mean, I'm leaning towards the piracy issue.
Okay.
I mean, how many people do you know pirate DS games?
I don't know. You really want me to give you a number? I mean,
no,
I
don't, you don't have to give you a number. Me a percentage.
Three. I don't
3%
know.
3% of people you think pirate DS games?
No, I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, some of the people are saying, okay, it's an M-rated game, and it's still going to sell really well, but they're not. It's just not going to sell it in the first month. Once the word of mouth gets out, it's going to sell. It's going to sell really well. I think they pointed to to Call of Duty on the DS. Didn't have a good first month, but it went on to sell out a lot of units. And, you know, the reviews were really good.
It's the highest reviewed DS game on Metacritic.
My theory is that, I don't know, people like, I'm not looking to play Grand Theft Auto on my DS.
Like, that's not lot. I think that's definitely part of it. I don't know, what the audience is for it. I tried playing it on the train and I just couldn't really get into it. I didn't want to play that kind of game.
It seems like it doesn't really work in the portable format.
Yeah. You know?
At least in my opinion, that the funniest part of all, this is great. So I was just, doing research for the show, and I came across this post on Joystick, and I'm going to call this Snark Gone Wrong. So they posted a story on Joystick, and the headline is, "No, really? Atos believes Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars will move 2 million copies in the U.S. And they go on to post about how this analyst from Cowen and Company believes Chinatown Wars is going to sell 2 million copies in the U.S. And then the blogger on Joystick writes, only 2 million? And then he goes on to say, oh, we have some predictions too. In 10 years, people will still need water. And parachute pants will never come back into style. And number three will never make as much as these analysts do for our opinion. So basically saying that this is such a sure thing and, snark, snarky, snark, snark, snark. Meanwhile, and it doesn't look like this thing's selling 2 million copies.
No, it is not going to be moving. And parachute pants have come back.
But,
it's like a fashion trend for women now. But anyway, mm-hmm. So they were wrong on two counts.
Right.
Yeah, I think piracy is a big issue on this as well. I know people that don't listen to shows like ours and don't read gaming websites, but have that stupid, that card for their Game Boy DS that they can download games off the internet.
Game Boy DS?
Yes, their Game Boy DS. Brr, that's all I have to say to you.
Right.
Because I started saying something and I finished off saying something else. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. But so I think that the piracy issue on the DS is a big problem. Yes.
All right. I mean, there is a story here that I pulled about piracy on the PC. There's a game called Demigod that came out.
Yes, I think
out.
I pulled the same story for our outline also.
Oh.
That's funny.
Yeah, they said that basically 88% of the people were playing at the peak hour online were people who pirated the game.
Yeah. It's, I think it was the number was they, because they went to the servers were very slow at first and they didn't know why. And they checked out that there was 120,000 connections on launch day.
Right.
And 18,000 of them were legitimate customers on at that time. 18,000 of 120,000. And they were overloading the servers where they had to move everything to a doppelganger network that only.
Doppelganger.
Yes, a doppelganger network. I'm using the words in the article I'm reading. Thanks, Joystick. And
was it snarky?
A little bit. And, it's crazy, first of all. And they didn't put copy protection on this game. There's no copy.
There's no copy protection on it at all. But it doesn't even matter because people always break the copy protection. I think the only copy protection that people really don't break is if it's on Steam. And I think what's going to wind up happening is they're not even going to release like retail versions of the game anymore.
Well, like, why would you? If 88% of your users have stolen the product,
right.
I mean, the only people that are hurting themselves are these people that want to play this game but refuse to buy it.
Or the people that want to buy, that like having a physical copy of their media, like it's going to disappear. You're not going to have that option.
Well, at least
anymore.
On the PC, I think it's a little harder to get illegal pirated games on the 360 because, you know, you still have games that can sell 938,000 copies in a month.
But it is, you know, it actually is pretty easy to pirate games on the 360.
I guess. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't have any pirated games on my 360.
No, either do I. You have to basically hack it. But I don't.
Yeah, I think that requires a little more work than stealing a game
yes.
on a PC. You don't have to.
It does.
You don't have to mod your PC to steal
Correct.
Games to play on
Correct.
Your PC.
So I think what message this sends to the PC game industry is, hey, release your game on Steam or some downloadable service that, you know, you really, I don't think you can hack that. And if you want to have a retail version of the game, it's going to be a box with a code in it so that you can download it. You know, there's not going to be any CD there, which if you're a fan, if you want to own your media, you know, you may be in for an unpleasant surprise in the future.
Yes, maybe.
I forgot to do CAG News-ish. Let's do that right now, Wombat, and then we'll move into Microsoft and whatnot. I'm very happy to announce a new contest, Wombat. This show is sponsored by X-Blades. Okay, and X-Blades is a hack-and-slash action game, and they have this new rebate program going on. And it's actually, this is going on until February 2010. Okay, so you had a lot of time to take advantage of this rebate. It's a $5 rebate, but if you buy X-Blades and Velvet Assassin or Section 8, which are games that are coming out this year, you'll get an extra $5. So it's something to keep in mind, and you can watch, you know, you keep an eye on the game, and when it hits the price that you want, you can, you know, add this rebate right on top of that to get an even better deal. Now, let me tell you about this contest that we're having to celebrate this X-Blades rebate. It's called Show Us Your X-Blades, Wombat. Now, it sounds a little dirty, I know, but it doesn't have to be.
Could it be?
It could, actually. I guess it could be whatever you want it to be. The rules are very simple, Wombat. All you have to do, there'll be a contest thread up, and you'll see in the, you know, it'll be on the front page of CAG. It'll be in the, a link to it will be in the CAGcast post. You have to post either an original video, graphic, or any form of media at all. If you want to record audio, I mean, it's up to you. Anything but just like text, okay? You have to showcase either X, Blades, or both. And we're going to pick our favorite entry. And the winner will receive a $500 gift card to the retailer of their choice and a copy of X-Blades on the system of their choice. So a pretty good prize there, Wombat.
That's a very nice. Am I eligible?
If you're you can be eligible. Sure, I'll judge it myself. I don't think you're going to actually do anything.
I don't think so either. And I think that if you decided I should win, someone would cry foul play.
I don't think you're that creative that you would come up with something.
I'm incredibly creative.
You know, X-Blades, the main character in X-Blades is like this anime chick in a thong. I think if you get into a thong, Wombat, you got a good shot.
I think me in a thong gets me a good shot at anything.
Right. Getting arrested, mostly.
I've been there, done that.
Arrested and divorced. Anyway, so I want to thank South Peak Interactive, the publisher of X-Blades. X-Blades is available for PS3, PC, and Xbox 360, and you'll see ads on CAG this week for it, and it'll link to the rebate form. All right. And this contest is only a week. You have 1 week to do this, so it ends. You have to post your entry by April 27th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a big prize, so I'm expecting some people to put some effort into it. In fact, I think I'm going to enter Ty into it. Of course, I don't think he can win, but I have a good idea for.
Can you put him in a thong?
I'm not going to do that, but I have something that I think will be cute.
Excellent.
Did you notice the new and improved super search bar on CAG?
I mentioned it to you. I said how much I liked it before you even poked and prodded me as you normally do when something's new.
Oh. So if you notice, we put this big search bar up on CAG, which you can use to do search. A lot. Search, mostly. Yes. So you type in a game, and you'll see like this little thing pops up, and then you can click on prices, and you'll get all the prices of the different retailers. You can search users. You can search users' blogs and front page items, and you'll be able to search the forums with it very soon. I think maybe by the time you hear this, maybe later in the week. I'm not sure. But I don't know. Things are coming together.
Excellent.
And you'll see, like, we've changed the nav a little bit. So now you have a – it's much easier to find your collection and enter games into, you know, so you can enter games in there and your wish list. And everything's coming along nicely. Big shout out to Super Programmer John. He's been working very hard. And, you know, we're making the push here, Wombat.
Excellent.
Big push. All right, let's move into Microsoft. Resident Evil 5. Now, I told you, Wombat, because we got into this whole discussion about the downloadable content versus mode and how it upset me, because it clearly seemed to me that they were just withholding content so they could charge extra $5 for it, and I said I refused to buy the game new as a protest. I didn't ask other people to protest or whatever. I said this is what I'm going to be doing. And sure enough, I went to my local game store last week, and they had a used copy of – it was actually like – it wasn't the collector's edition. It was like it's something only out in Japan, the deluxe edition, I think it's called. So it comes in a metal tin, like one of those fat metal tins, and has some sort of soundtrack. And it was cheap. It was only $45, which is pretty cheap. And the reason why it was so cheap is because if you buy a used game in Japan – and it's missing something from the package, like the manual or, you know, anything. It becomes, like, the price, its value becomes halved almost. So, you know, this thing sells for, like, $90 usually.
And it was missing the instruction. $45 would be half. Yes.
Yeah, it was missing the instruction manual. So I was able to get that good deal. And I played, I'm up to chapter 2-something. I played it with Lick, you know, CAG cast fan, yeah. And CAG Lick. We played co-op the whole time. And of course, his guy was all jacked up because he beat the game like 4 times. So I didn't even really need to do anything. He was just like killing everybody with shotguns and shit. I don't know. It seemed fun to me. I had fun with the game. It didn't rock my world. I don't know. And it didn't feel like Resident Evil. Maybe just because it was the co-op experience.
Yeah, I think you need to play it a little bit alone and definitely play it with someone that hasn't been jacked.
Yeah.
I mean, I finished it yesterday. Finally.
Okay.
Finally finished the game yesterday. I also played a little Mercenaries and, you know, gave my weapon of choice its unlimited ammo so I could start up the game and again, make the game a little too easy, which, you mm-hmm. know, but that's kind of the point, I guess. I enjoyed the whole experience. I mean, I rarely finish a game these days, and I finished this, so...
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It seems fun. It's I'm not, like, constantly thinking about, oh, my God, I need to go play more Resident Evil 5. It'll be interesting to see if I do finish it.
It could happen.
It's not that long, right?
It's not that long, actually. No, it isn't that long at all. The only reason why it took me so long to finish it is because I basically had a 2-week video game hiatus, but...
Right.
I'm sort of back again because I finished that and started another game up right away. I started Prince of Persia, which I know you didn't like. So,
yeah, I mean, what do you think of Prince of Persia? I found it a little boring.
See, I like it. I like the pace, and I like that it's a little slow and that there's not too much adversity in the game. And I think that they do a great job with, you know, what makes the Prince of Persia games great, which is running on the walls and doing those crazy tricks. And I dressed my guy up to look like the dude from Assassin's Creed, so I kind of feel like I'm playing Assassin's Creed 1.5.
Oh, interesting. So. Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate it. I felt somewhat disconnected from the game. Like everything, like the combat feels like I'm not really like I'm only like marginally involved. And,
well, you only fight a guy like one dude per level.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I like the older Prince of Persia's where you're like rewinding the time and. And that stuff.
See, yeah, no, I kind of like this better. I don't know. And also, the missus enjoys watching the game.
That's good. That's always a plus.
So, yeah, like she didn't like watch, she couldn't watch any of Resident Evil 5. I could only play that when she was asleep. So this game I was actually able to play this afternoon. And
too
I also
scary played, or she was just found it boring?
Both.
How could it be scary and boring?
Ask my wife.
All right.
And you really want me to ask to try and rationalize the thought of an adult woman?
No, I no. don't. Well, I didn't. I got this message from Speedy05. He says, Cheapy, I 100% agree with you. Dark Sector is way more fun to play than the overhyped Resident Evil 5, and I too recommend it to anyone who has not already played it. It's a shame so many gamers seem to have missed out on this great title. Now, remember, I hadn't played Resident Evil 5, and I said I have a feeling that Dark Sector might be more fun than Resident Evil 5. I didn't know. It was just a theory. So, but Speedy is lending credence to my theory.
Well, that guy then, you know, that makes it true. Yeah.
Yes. I'm actually on the final boss of Dark Sector. I haven't finished it, but I'm
right
there. Wow,
that's impressive.
That's what?
That's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. It's really great. It. I mean, I love Dark Sector. And for $10, I mean, you can't go wrong. If you don't feel like you got your $10 worth with that game, then I don't even know what to tell you. Speedy also says, Wombat, don't you find the AI in Resident Evil 5 completely lame? Aside from the zombies now on motorcycles and driving big rigs and seriously dumb, Shiva never has any ammo and refuses to use her stash of hand grenades. The game is fun, but is no way worth $60 or the hype. What say you, Wombat?
Well, I think it's just how you go into the game. First of all, they're not zombies. They're the infected. They're the whatever they are. Los Plagas was what they were called in Resident Evil 4. I forgot what they're called in this one already. That's neither here nor there. You have to consider Sheva, as they call her in the game, a walking suitcase.
With big tits.
Yeah, that's basically all she is. She's, you know, a storage vagina.
I need to get one of those for my trips.
A storage vagina? Yeah. I mean, because she doesn't. She doesn't do anything but hold an extra 9 things.
Does she shoot?
She does. Guys? She'll shoot. She'll shoot people. Like, yeah, no, she's not going to throw a grenade, but she'll hold on to grenades. And if you ask her to give you the grenades, she'll give them to you when you need them.
Can you use her vagina?
That's where I think she keeps the grenades.
Hey, Sheva, I need a grenade.
Exactly.
More ammo over here.
You don't want to know where she keeps her eggs.
Right. All right. I mean, I'll give it a try with the single player and see how I like it. It certainly looks nice, but you know, I don't know. I just have the controls, man. I don't know, man. It wants to be Gears of War, but it can't run and shoot.
At some points, it really wants to be that game too, but
you know, it does. Yeah. I don't know why they can't just go the distance.
Because that would make it not a Resident Evil game at all.
I think it would be. If you could walk and shoot, it would be fine.
Okay.
It would still be the same game. Just control better. And you wouldn't feel like you're fighting an uphill battle against the controller.
Anyway.
So you picked up Flock?
I did. Well, there was a thing going on the Twitter where when Ashton Kutcher was trying to get all his followers, his million followers, Trixie... from Xbox offered anyone who unfollows him a free copy of Flock. And I unfollowed him and she sent me a code for Flock, so I used it.
Did you play it?
I did. And I'm glad I didn't pay for it.
It's like a puzzle game or something?
It's sort of like I guess it's a puzzle game. You're a spaceship and you go around the screen and where you are, you scare the sheep and you have to scare the sheep towards your mothership. To suck the sheep in, they call the mothership the Mother Flocker.
I get it.
Do you?
It's like the curse, but without the curse.
Oh, you know, I didn't think of that. And and that's the whole game.
Right.
And it's
like
kind of
slow. Right? Or $15. Yeah, bucks.
It's $15. And that game moves slow. I mean, Prince of Persia, you think moves slow? This game would put you to sleep by level 3.
All right. Well, I don't need to be put to sleep with that.
Yeah. There's a demo. You could try it if you don't believe me, and there you go. There's Flock.
There's Flock. Lastly, in the world of Xbox, there was a survey done in Japan with gamers, And the Xbox 360 had the highest level of satisfaction out of all the consoles, Wombat, which was something that I sort of mentioned, I don't know, a month or two ago. I mentioned that, you know, every once in a while I'll go out for drinks or dinner and I'll meet some guy, some Japanese guy who's a gamer, and they'll own an Xbox 360 and they'll say it's their, you know, they'll own everything and they say that the Xbox 360 is their favorite console. And I've always said, you know, Microsoft's biggest problem in Japan is nothing to do with their marketing or the games that they have available for the system. It's all about, you know, what's built into Japanese gamers' minds, and it's that, you know, Sony and Nintendo are Japanese companies. They've been around for a long time making games for Japan, and it's the safe bet. And just there are some gamers who are willing to take a chance and buy an Xbox 360 or, you know, have the disposable income to do so. And there's some that aren't. And I don't really think there's much that Microsoft can do to convince those guys to give the American game company a chance and a place in their tiny apartment. So, I don't know. I just thought that was interesting, Wombat. That's okay. All I have to say about that. So let's move on to Sony. And there's been a survey going around about the God of War 3 Collector's Edition.
Yes,
now,
I've
I know
heard
that
about this.
We both really enjoyed both God of War games.
Yeah, God of War 2 was great.
God of War 2 was great too. Yeah, I think that's down to $20 now, by the way.
Oh, it's a good game.
Yeah, the PSP one.
It's very short. What?
It is?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, Chains of Olympics.
Yes.
Olympus, right?
Chains of Olympics.
The Olympics. Yeah, it's down to $20 now. I just looked.
It's
I just
a collection
looked it up
of
on
mini
K.
games. It has track and field, the decathlon, the pole vault.
Yes, yes. So Sony did a survey. They want to see what do gamers want in the God of War 3 Collector's Edition. And one of the options in the survey was to get God of War and God of War 2 available on the disc, on the Blu-ray disc.
That would be great. That would be so cool.
Would you, like, how much would you spend extra for that? For
the game edition? We're going to assume it's going to be a $60 game. So I guess if they released that for $80, that would be kind of cool.
You would spend an extra $20.
$10 for an extra game.
That was the only bonus, including, you know, okay, because there's some of the other things on this list are art book, exclusive downloadable content, developer commentary, which, you know, doesn't really cost them anything, and a Kratos statue or of some sort. So you would like the God of War 1 and God of War 2 the most out of all those things?
Yeah, I think so, because that's something that I would probably play.
And if that was the only thing included in the collector's edition, you would spend $20 extra for that?
Possibly.
If they did something to the game to, like, enhance the textures or something like that?
Yeah, like if it was an actual, like, HD remix, so to speak, of the two games. Although there was an HD mode on God of War 2 that you had to, like, push all sorts of buttons to get it to work, and it was a pain.
Yep.
But it did look great.
I
think that would be awesome, actually.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know if I'm interested in playing them again, especially if, you know, you got God of War 3. So like, I'm sort of interested in playing that.
Well, I think maybe...
I guess it depends how long the game is.
I think it'd be great if they had it on the disc as not the collector's edition for $60 and you had to play you had to play God of War 3 to unlock them.
And then in the collector's edition, you don't have to pay to unlock it?
No, in the collector's edition, it would just come with like an art book and a Kratos statue. And that would be the difference.
I see. All right. Well, that's interesting. Did you ever see that leaked footage that was floating around there of God of War 3?
I want to say I did, but I don't remember.
It was from, I can't even remember what it was from. Maybe GDC. I'm not even sure. But I don't know. It looks like it's coming along. A whole lot of enemies on the screen. I don't know. Those are one of my favorite games, those God of War games. Especially they had Harry Hamlin in the second one. I mean, that's just beautiful. some SingStar news, Wombat. I know you're very into the karaoke scene.
Oh, yeah, that's me. I don't even know what karaoke is. I know what karaoke is, though.
Right. So SingStar, you know, I think we talked about this one or two shows ago. They're having this whole add-on store coming. And one of the new features that you can download in the add-on store is voice commands. So you don't need to use the controller anymore to select the song. You could just say, you know, Billy Joel, Piano Man, or whatever, and it'll select the song for you. So, and it's also getting trophy support, which I thought is interesting. I find myself playing Lips more, and I think it's almost entirely was two reasons why. Because SingStar is actually, I think, the better game in terms of all the different features and the online connectivity, and certainly the SingStar store has way more songs available. But the Lips wireless microphones and the fact that you can just plug in an iPod or stream songs off your network, you know, of course you don't have the lyrics or anything, but that's a big selling point to me. I find myself using that a lot. Although there are going to be wireless microphones coming out for SingStar. And also, SingStar Queen is coming out in August in the United States.
Which is
cool. I love Queen. I mean, they're one of my favorite bands, but I don't think I could sing any of those songs at all.
You already brought that up once.
I know. So I'm torn.
I see, you get it. I don't think it matters if you can sing like him or not if you have fun singing the songs.
Yeah, maybe. I wish they did this all
as
downloadable,
too. Although I'd rather have Rock Band Queen because Brian May is as good a guitarist as Freddie Mercury was a singer.
And one of the best, you know, one of the best Guitar Hero songs ever was Killer Queen.
Yeah.
That was so fun to play. So I would love to see. I mean, personally, I wish these SingStar add-on, you know, like Queen and ABBA, I'm not interested in. But I don't know why these can't just all be downloadable, you know? I don't want to have to go buy the disc and then how's it going to work with swapping the disc? I don't want to swap discs. I want it all downloadable. That's all I got to say about that.
Okay.
Speaking of downloadable, Wombat, Patapon 2 is coming out for the PSP. And in the United States, it's only going to be a downloadable title.
That's crazy.
In Japan, it's been out for a long time, and it's available on disc. But in America, it's download only. You know, you'll go to the store, you'll see the box on the shelf. It's just going to be a code in there. So, should be interesting. I think it's only a $20 title.
Yeah. And I guess they're saving money on production of those plastic circle-y
discs.
Yeah, things. So, I mean, those UMDs can't be cheap to make.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
In Japan, this is a full-price game. It's like, it's $40, I think.
So, at least you're getting a discount of sorts.
Yeah, and it was always going to be $20. I know, but I don't know.
And I know the first one launched at $20. You say it was always going to be a $20 game, but do you think they always knew that it was going to be a digital download?
Right. Yeah, it's a good point. And by the way, I just realized that I might be getting confused between Patapon and LocoRoco,
which has been out for a while now.
Yeah. LocoRoco has been out. Yeah, maybe that's what I saw. But LocoRoco, well, whatever game I saw on the shelf was $40. That's all I know.
That's a great story. Thanks for doing some research.
Well, I just forgot. I just realized. You know, they kind of look the same.
I guess.
A little bit. A little bit. They got the, you know.
If LocoRoco, that helps you sleep at night.
I played LocoRoco, too, at Tokyo Game Show last year. It was actually really fun.
Excellent.
No, I didn't really pick it up. Hmm. All right, let's move on to Nintendo. The DSi came out last week, and it did very well, 435,000 in the first week, which is pretty surprising, Wombat. I mean, I figured everybody already had a DS, and I don't know. They figured
they
wouldn't want to.
Well, they got commercials with Beyonce.
I see. I haven't seen those.
And that, you know, that'll get people to buy a DSi.
I guess so.
I don't know. I mean, people like that. It's the same people that you said wouldn't buy a DS Lite when they had their DS Fats, or the same people that, you know, wouldn't buy a pink one because they already had a white one. And yet here I am, I have a DS Fat, a DS Lite in white, and a DS Lite in pink. So does it shock me that many people bought a DSi? No, because for all intents and purposes, I am those people. It just happens. Like, you wake up one morning and you go, how the hell did I get another DS? They spawn like gremlins.
Yeah, they have some sort of mind control. It says, you know, you have to build the DS family.
Exactly. It's crazy.
It's a weird thing because I think the DS Lite is a bigger step up, you know, from the DS Fat than the DSi is from the DS Lite.
But if you really look at it, there's not really any new functionality to it. between the DS Fat and the DS Lite. I mean, it plays well, the same
screen
games.
Is the most important part of
it. And
whole
the screen's a little
thing.
Brighter, so then you go
it's a,
and
a little, have, blah, 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 blah. It's a little brighter, it's way brighter.
It's way brighter.
Thank you.
And now the DSi has a screen that's a little bigger and a little brighter.
Right, very little.
Says you.
Well, I have it.
I know. And you haven't turned it on since you bought it.
I turned it on twice.
You know what I started playing this week? Professor Layton.
Oh, it's good, right?
Yeah, I like that game. I'm yeah, getting pretty far in it, and I've only had to use hints once on one puzzle, and I feel pretty smart when I solve things.
So. See, I always feel like that's the type of game that people that like most people would be interested in playing on the DS rather than in Grand Theft Auto.
Yes, but watching me count on my hands on the train, I must look like I have like some sort of severe mental disorder.
Nobody makes eye contact on the Long Island Railroad, though.
I know, but you could kind of feel the person sitting next to me looking at me, going, "Why does that person keep moving their fingers?"
And you do feel the person sitting next to you.
You do.
Often.
I do. So they probably think I'm a paranoid schizophrenic as I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 11, 10, 11, 12, 11, 15.
Wow, you just said 11, 10.
I know. That's because I was doing one of those puzzles in my head.
I understand.
If anyone who's played the game can think of the puzzle that I was thinking of, I'd be very impressed.
All right, Wombat, the GameStop CEO, Dan DiMatteo, sort of dropped a hint that there's a major Nintendo title coming out this year, but didn't give much more hint than that. Just said he was told by Nintendo to reserve shelf space for the end of the year. He was doing an interview with CNBC. I don't know. What could it be?
It's probably going to be Wii Play Summer Resort, and they're going to postpone it even longer than they said they are.
You think that's it?
Would you be surprised with its one-to-one motion control that no game can use? Or whatever?
It's too sensitive for every game. I don't know. We played whatever it's called, Wii Resort. Wii Sports Resort is what it's called.
Yeah.
Shipwreck and I played it at E3, and I was so tired. We played like the sword fighting game. So tired after like two rounds that I couldn't even play. Like I had to like do like an Obi-Wan Kenobi and just hold that sword over my head and let him kill me because I just couldn't go on anymore.
I turned on my Wii this weekend.
Really? Because it turned blue and it was bothering you?
That was part of the reason, and I needed to put in that update, which I finally did.
Yeah.
And I played a little Super Mario Brothers.
Uh-huh.
Because I have it. I'm like, oh,
Super Mario Brothers. Super Mario console
from the virtual console. Yes, the original game, Super Mario Brothers, in all its 8-bit glory.
Right.
Yeah, it was a good time. Have you ever played that game?
I've never played that game. It's all I played. I sit in my room on the floor, play that game a million times. Use the warp zones. Yep. I mean, you know, you could just play that game forever.
You could.
And I did. And
you know what's amazing
is
as I'm playing the game and I'm looking at it and it's, you know, it's on my big TV and I'm like, you know, this game, for what it is, it still looks great.
I haven't played it in a long time.
You could really see like every pixel in that game, but every pixel, you know what it is. That makes any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It's a pixel. How could you know what it is?
Because that's an eye. I can tell that that's an eye and I can tell that that's a nose and that's a mustache.
All right, Wombat.
I'm complimenting the ability of that game to hold up over time.
I'm trying to see if there's anything else here from this CNBC interview with the GameStop dude. He also thinks that the Wii is going to get a price cut or could get a price cut this year. And he's wondering, like everyone else, is where the hell is the PS3 price cut? And basically says it's got to be $100 because the $50 isn't going to do much, he doesn't think.
What'd you put in iPhone stuff?
I put in some iPhone stuff. Are you not going to let me talk about it?
Go for it. I don't have an iPhone, so I'll just zone out for a minute.
It's going to be cool. Well, first of all, I just wanted to mention this. My grandma is very old and sort of, you know, old, and she's in an assisted living center now, and they have the Wii, and they play Wii bowling, Wii Sports bowling.
That's cool.
That's all I wanted to say. Let me do some very quick iPhone reviews because I always said like I'm not interested in playing games on the iPhone, and I lied. I'm interested in playing them if they cost $1 or 99 cents. So here's some quick ones for you. One, I didn't say Jon Snow yet this show, and so now I just did. He turned me on from his Twitter to Sky Burger.
Wait, he's on Twitter?
Yeah.
What's his Twitter name?
I'm sure it's Jon Snow.
How do you, but okay.
J-E-A-N. I better double check that. I don't want to give that out wrong. Why? You want to? Like,
I'll add him. I'll add him. I'll want to follow Jon Snow so I can read when he's having lunch with you.
Yeah, it's J-E-A-N Snow. One word.
Excellent. I can't believe you couldn't go a show without bringing his name up. Okay.
He turned me on to Sky Burger.
I don't think he exists anyway.
99 cents.
But anyway, go ahead.
You basically, it'll give you a, it's like things drop from the sky and you have a burger on the bottom of the screen and it's all motion controlled. So there is an option for touch control, but I found that the motion control actually works better than the touch control, which sort of surprised me. And what it does is it gives you a name of a burger and it tells you, all right, we need 5 pieces of lettuce, 10 pieces of cheese, 12 burger patties, 5 pickles, and 3 onions. And all the different ingredients drop from the sky, and it's very simple. You just need to build that burger.
Don't you have dreams like that?
That's my reality, dude. That's why I gained 15 pounds.
Yeah.
Eating too many burgers. Actually, I've been going to McDonald's too much, for sure.
That'll do it.
Yeah, and I've been drinking too much soda. It's all that shit. Mm. Anyway, Sky Burger, it's done very well. There's online leaderboards. It's only 99 cents. The motion control works very well. I definitely recommend Sky Burger. Next, Flight Control, which is another game that I play when I'm on the toilet. It's just a touch screen. It's totally uses the touch screen. You have 2 runways and a helipad, and you have different planes that come onto the screen, and you draw on the screen with your finger. And you draw their flight path, and you basically just have to get all the I just knocked my backup microphone over. You have to make all the planes land on their proper runway without running into each other. Very simple concept. It's done. The only scoring is basically, you know, how many planes you land. And it just, you know, you'll play it and then you'll crash a plane and you go, okay, one more time. I want to do one more. My high is 62, by the way. It's also 99 cents. It's very addictive. It's very well done, and it makes perfect use of the touchscreen. 2 more quick ones. iDracula, which is a very popular game. It's basically a twin-stick shooter, except you're using the touchscreen. And, you know, it's done very well. It looks great. I mean, a lot of these games, you know, a game like that actually I think looks better than a DS game. I mean, maybe I'm crazy and I haven't played a DS game in a while, but I don't know. I think it looks better. Also 99 cents. Seems like it's a very well-made game, a lot of different weapons. And lastly, this is not a game, but it's an application that one of our listeners sent me a code to, so I would mention it on the show, and I figured I'd mention it. It's called iNapkin, and it's basically if you want to doodle on a napkin on your iPhone, you can use that. You know, if you like to draw little notes and stuff. It does that very well, and you can have different sized napkins and different colors and whatnot. My handwriting is so shitty in real life that I could never, you know, use like an application like this because I can't even read my handwriting if I use a pen and paper. All right, Wombat, that's the iPhone section.
Oh, you still
there?
Talking?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry.
Shall we do, let's see.
We talked about everything that we put in this section already.
Yeah, we pretty much did the Kags on News. These things sort of came up...
During the show.
So let's move right to the Kag Bag.
Yeah, I think I have time for, like, a question.
Come on. Okay, let me find a good one, then. I don't like any of these. Do you like any of these tweet ones? Do you have any... I mean, these are sort of boring. Show us your tweets.
Yeah. Here's one from Semi Fracky. He wants to know if... what it would be like to eat lunch with Jimmy Choo, or if I know anyone who has. I think he's referring to Danny Choo.
Jimmy Choo's his father.
Yeah. And I don't know anyone who's had lunch with Jimmy Choo, or I guess...
I haven't had lunch with him either.
I guess we would talk about Choo's a lot, and if you're referring to Danny Choo, I know one person. His name is Jon Snow. You can follow him on Twitter.
He might have, actually. I have not. Here's some quick questions. We'll go through these fast,
sure.
Okay? Milky Man says, Cheapy, what do you see in CAG's future when everything moves to digital distribution and they all fuck us in the ass with no used game sales and no sales, no clearances and no coupons?
It's not going to happen. And not everything isn't going to move to digital distribution. There's too much space set aside in these big box retailers for video games, and there's so much invested in it, and there's so many marketing dollars that are pushed towards it, and the companies want their consoles to be sold in these retail stores, where they would lose so much money if they got rid of the disc-based media, that they would probably stop selling the consoles in those stores, that just because they can, that yes, I understand the technology is there to do digital distribution. Yes, it can be done, but it won't be done because too many companies would have to eat too much money for it to happen.
Well, and also it's marketing. Like you said, it's marketing for these companies. When you walk into Walmart and you're going there to buy your toothpaste or whatever, your plunger, and you say, hey, let me check out the video game section. And what's going on? See what's going on in the video game section. And you make some impulse buy. I mean, if everything was just digital distribution, there's no boxes in stores, you know, that situation's not going to happen. And the industry, I think, needs that to happen.
There needs to be boxes with something in the box.
To answer your question, Milky Man, if it does happen, hopefully I sell the company before that happens. That's, you know, that would be.
And I'm sure you get offers every day.
I do not get offers every day, but there have been offers, Wombat. Don't try to belittle my accomplishments.
Here's some magic beans.
I've had some surprisingly big offers, Wombat. You don't know what I have. That are not magic beans, but money. Big money, Wombat. A lot of zeros.
I don't know. I have a feeling that if you had a particularly good offer, you would take it.
I had a very fair offer, actually, fairly recently. It just wasn't. It needed to be bigger because I feel like CAG is going to get bigger.
Was it seven figures?
Seven figures is what? Let me count that. How many is that? That's $1 million?
Yes.
It was more than that.
Really?
Yes, it was.
And you didn't take it?
I did not take it.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, well.
It was multiple seven figures, or was it above the eight-figure mark?
Whoa, eight figures? Yeah. 10 million?
Yes.
Dude, come on. What am I? I'm not retarded.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Just checking if I'm not retarded.
Yes, I felt as though I needed to.
I will tell you right now, and I think my dad hates when I talk about this stuff. My father does like the finances for CAG. If you offer me $10 million for CAG, I will take it.
I don't have $10
million. That is, you know, remember the GPD promise, Wombat?
Yes.
If I fart, I will tell you about it. Mm-hmm. The GPD promise part two is if you offer me $10 million for CAG, I will take it.
You know, it's funny. I remember 2 years ago when you said you would sell CAG for $4 million.
You do see, that's what gets me in trouble.
Because you said that. You said that 2 years ago. That's why I was asking.
Why do you even remember that?
Because it's what I do.
Did you write that down?
Yeah, I have it on a post-it note on my screen. No, because I remember these
with
things.
With darts in it?
Yes.
My picture and darts?
Exactly.
Okay.
Am I part of the deal?
My dad is really upset. So just remember that was a long time ago.
It was. I was going to say that was 2 years ago and things changed. That's what makes it so funny.
Let's remember the GPD promise part two, though.
If you fart, you'll call it. Yes.
That's part one. Mahoney wants to know, Mahoney07, I'm sorry, what's the ratio of people who download the CAGcast from cheapassgamer.com to the people who download from iTunes, Zune, whatever? There's some other way to get the show. Okay, it's a very interesting question. iTunes accounts for about 60% of the distribution of the CAGcast.
I thought it'd be higher.
And the other majority is just direct download. Everything else is pretty tiny. So those are the two. I don't remember offhand what the percentage is for the actual just direct download, but it's probably, I'm going to say it's probably 30%. Let's say it's 60% iTunes, 30% direct download, and then 10% is everything else, Zune, you know, some RSS aggregators or whatever. So there. That answers that question, Wombat. Oh, wait, here it is right here. Wow. Okay. It might have gone down. It looks like it says 51% right now for
iTunes
and 40%. Okay. Anything else here, Wombat, that we need to talk about? Maybe not. I think we're done.
All right. Housekeeping?
Well, Wombat, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. I want to thank our sponsor, X-Blades, available for PS3, 360, and PC.
Get your X-Blades on.
$5 rebate or a $10 rebate if you buy Section 8 or Velvet Assassin. And look out for our contest, the Show Us Your X-Blades contest. Win a $500 gift card. See CAG for details. I'm sure you will see it all over the place on CAG. Also want to remind us to follow us on Twitter. Everybody should follow us on Twitter. Well, yeah. I don't want to remind us.
Have you been following me on Twitter?
Yes, I have. Go to twitter.com/cheapyd or /wombat5277. You could also follow Shipwreck/Shipwreck. You can also get CAG video game deals. If you're in the UK, it's UK Game Deals. If you're in the US, it's Video Game Deals. And if you're in Canada, it's Canada Game Deals. How many freaking Twitters do we have? It's a lot.
That's a lot of Twitters. I only know mine. It's Wombat5277, which also happens to be my birthday, which is coming up in like 2 weeks.
Oh. So I got to buy you a birthday present.
That's right. I could use some socks.
So, do you want socks? I actually like when I get socks for my birthday now because I can't buy socks here.
Oh, see, no, I actually just got some socks. So,
what do you want for your birthday?
I have no idea what I want for my birthday. I'm actually pretty good. That's what's really most frightening. It's like, oh.
All right, I'll come up with something.
You think of something. If you sell a copy of X-Blades, you can pay off my mortgage. That'd be nice.
Copy of X-Blades for the Xbox?
Yes, and a copy of X-Blades.
Okay, mortgage and copy
mortgage
of X-Blades.
And X-Blades. That's what I'd like.
All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank Nelson for coming on the show and talking to us. And we will see you next week.
The first electronic football games like these were for only one player.
And run.
But something was missing.
Can I play? Wait your turn.
Then along came head-to-head electronic football by Coleco.
Now we can play at the same time.
I'm offense.
I'm defense.
With head-to-head, you're really in the game. A power sweep. He fights through for the tackle. You pass. He blitzes. Intercepts.
This is real competition.
Why settle for a one-player game when you can have it all? Play alone, against the computer, or for real competition, play
head-to-head.
Why settle for less?